Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. And we are going to reflect now on what was a fantastic day yesterday. That was Donegal winning Ulster. Ulster Championships. The sounds of it for you on the radio were brought to you by Oisín Kelly, who's with us now. Hi, Oisín.
Good morning, Greg.
All right. So, what a fantastic experience.
Fantastic experience. It was great to be there. Great to be part of it. It was a thrilling Ulster final, to say the least. But Donegal have pulled off this year what nobody was thinking that they could do this time last year, Greg. There's been a 360 from... where Donegal was such a low ebb, losing to Down in the Ulster Championship.
360 means we go back to where we were.
Oh, 180. Yeah, well, okay then. You'll keep me right. My head's a bit fuzzy today. So it is. It was a long commentary yesterday.
It
was a long commentary yesterday, but listen, it's fantastic. It's great to be part of it. There's Davy coming now. He's late as usual. His timekeeping is the worst. Greg, I'm constantly giving out to him ahead of matches to be in time.
What is
wrong
with you?
To do this.
Why can't you get anywhere on time?
He literally walked in the front door of the building
high
and
demand.
In here.
High demand. Well, excuse me.
You know, I can't help it.
We are ever rehane here.
Sorry, I know. No,
there's no high demand.
Shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
But it's good.
Keep busy.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I have a wee day job that I do.
I know that, Brendan. Don't get all sensitive now all of a sudden. God, you got this far not being sensitive. We'll come back to you, Oisín. Well, the 2 years, you can chat back and forth as much as you like. So, Brendan, unpack yesterday for us?
Yeah, listen, if it was a normal match, extra time and penalties, everything was in it. I think probably, Oisín, the first half, when we were reflecting, because we came back so late last night, I'm still digesting what happened. And, you know, we thought the first half would be maybe like Tyrone, a bit cagey. You know, it was unbelievable, you know, scores everywhere and high quality. And I think the second half did get a bit cagey then, but there was just something about our lads, even when we went four down. I don't know, I was saying to Oisín, you know, we'll still come back. You know, there's something in us, and someone comes up with brilliance every time. There's so many players that have that moment of brilliance, and we kept getting it.
A lot of the time it seemed like we had to work much harder for our scores than Armagh did.
Yeah, they were definitely stripping us, and I'm saying in terms of turnovers, when we got inside their 45, there was a lot more turnover from their side to ours. So there were so many things in it that, you know, you would say from an Armagh perspective, you know, a few times they had us maybe where they wanted us, 4 points up, 2 points up in extra time as well. Yeah. Even 2 points in extra time was a massive lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had the Darrell Boyle point, you had the Niall O'Donnell 2 points when we were four down, and Dara's point, and then, of course, Oran Doherty's.
When they went four up, that was the time that they should have really went for it, and they didn't. I think, not that they started to panic, but they went into themselves about four up, and that allowed us to come back. And we never panicked at all. We just stuck with the game plan, kept
didn't
going
stick
with it.
Stick with the game plan, because there was periods of the game where it seemed we lacked a little bit of a plan.
Yeah,
if you know
that
what
happens,
I mean.
You get phases in games.
Yeah,
it's hard to keep that going for
the conditions.
You have, Greg. I'm sure you got wet yesterday, so you did. but there was a torrential downpour. At the end of the first half. So conditions played its part. Maybe played its part in them turnovers as well. The surface was greasy and the ball was greasy. But yeah, from a game plan point of view, Brendan knows this from doing a bit of coaching, it's hard to keep it up for a full duration of a game. And then you have to add in 20 minutes of extra time on top of that as well. But the way they came back from four down, they were three down twice against Tyrone the previous game. The first time that there was really questions asked of them this year, and they responded. And they responded again to come from four down in an Ulster final, and all the momentum was with Armagh, and Donegal were able to turn that around. And then an extra time, for me, the 2 points an extra time coming back from was bigger than the four in normal time, because you've tired legs.
But the extra time was actually more open than much of the normal time.
Yeah, because like we've seen how cagey extra time was against Tyrone. So 2 points when you've got such a short period of time. It's 2 points can seem to be a huge gap, but Donegal chipped away at it. And Brennan mentioned it, the quality of the scores yesterday were unreal.
Darrell did that in normal time in the first half. Now, people say it's the wrong side for right-footed people, but for a right-footed kicker, but for Darrell, it seems to suit him. We see him so often in that right-hand channel. But, you know, you look at the penalties, Oisín, just looking back, and the first one, I suppose, Thompson's maybe got a wee bit lucky with, in terms of go down the middle. Yeah. But after that, the actual brilliance of our penalty takers and the fact that Aaron Doherty decided to jump Thompson then.
Yeah.
He stepped up and said, I'm going to take this. I mean, that shows some of the courage.
Well, was it Aaron Doherty that made that decision, or was it Jim McGuinness that made that decision?
I think that's critical
because what it did was it freshened it up, and all of a sudden Blaine Hughes is looking at it going, right, Thompson's not coming here, but it's Aaron Doherty. And the quality of the penalties. Watch Aaron Doherty's penalties again. Bottom left.
But once you get down to 5-5, every penalty, the pressure on that is just...
Well, if you look at Sean Patton for the two previous penalties before that, he went to the right side and nearly got out at the arm off fourth. The fifth one went through his legs.
Yeah.
So it did. Came up, went through his legs. So you felt, right, there's something coming here from Sean Patton. Mm. He's getting closer and closer.
Both keepers in the first few, Oisin, were diving a bit too soon. Yeah. And to be honest, watching Blaine Hughes, and I said this to you, Oisin, he was way off his line. Yeah. I think if he actually had saved a couple of them, I think the linesman would have called it back because he was encroaching.
Yeah, well, and Patton was inside his line. He was moving inside his line, particularly for the last few of our... But the quality of the penalties, it would fit in to any big soccer game in Ireland. You had men that have played soccer at a really high level. For Ireland at underage, like McGee did it, Aaron Doherty was a good accomplished soccer player. Darryl Boyle was an accomplished
and
soccer player
as well too.
And Sean Patton has a soccer background, so that played in. That played into.
But Brennan, back to the game, sort of as a player on the pitch, right? So you're four down. Historically, maybe we've had spells as a county whereby at that point it goes away from us. I don't know, the heads drop or Armagh push on or the opposition push on. But we've done this a couple of times now, and Jim referenced this, in games whereby it looked like, oh, here we go. But the guys stuck to it, got back into the game, ground it out. What's happening on the pitch at that point whereby, different to the heads dropping and the gap widening, what's different now that the fellas stick at it and can... claw those leads back in?
Yeah, you'd have to say it's back to the magic of Jim. Of course, you know, his backroom team and everything he brings, because, you know, as you mentioned, just tactics there. There's so much more elements to it. It's hard to just put it on one thing. That belief in that ball to one. And then you'd have to say, and from the Armagh perspective, and again, Armagh are going to be blamed for losing another big game and when it was there from they won it. But every modern game, like if somebody goes 3 or 4 up, they automatically sit. Everybody does it, but people will be blaming that now on their mindset.
Why didn't you crack on?
Their game plan was good. They were dispossessing us. They had a kick pass option, got up the pitch, which we hadn't. We never kicked it at all. And many, they hit some brilliant scores. I mean, Turbot in particular. So you're looking, thinking, you know, Armagh played really well in the day. They hit 5 penalties. I mean, you can't ask for much more than that. They scored the 5 normally in a shootout. That might carry you through.
They missed 3 of their 4 the year before.
That's right. So, they've improved, Oisin. Yeah. So in many ways, Armagh played so well, and yet... we still beat them, and you'd have to say that there comes back, and Jim mentioned it after night, training, and in terms of the mental side of it, Nick, I'm thinking just Jim taking the likes of an Aaron Doherty aside or the likes of Oisin Kellen, and I think he's able just to make those players stand so tall, because at no point did Donegal wilt in that game, and as I say, Niall O'Donnell, the 2 points he hit were absolutely phenomenal. The first one, he just strode forward outside the boot. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were dead and buried looking at that point, and we clawed back in there. Yeah. So I think all that comes... And
he got a bit of space, a wee bit more space at that stage in the game.
They were a bit deeper, to get
the those points.
Too deep.
Yeah. You mentioned Oisin Gallen.
Yeah.
What a first half performance.
Oh, yeah.
It was, and the quality of his kicking. It was 5 points in the first half.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? 5 points, and one of... He kicked one with his left foot as well.
He did everything.
He did it.
And he couldn't.
And Paddy Burns could not handle him in the first half.
This is not a criticism at all, but just people might be interested to know, especially those who weren't sort of there at the time. For much of the game, Ryan McHugh was quite quiet.
But for that reason, Ryan McHugh was obviously targeted because of what happened
what
in the previous two games.
That's what I want you to talk about.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that was evident yesterday. Ryan had a decent game. But you could see that they were making sure that he was one of the key men that they want to try to eliminate yesterday.
How did they go about doing that?
Oh, well, they were doubling up on tackles all the time. So you could see it. Brennan mentioned it in commentary. Every single time, if it wasn't one, there was another one in on top, and they were hitting hard.
Yeah.
So they were, and the referee, McNally, for large parts of the games, decided to let a lot of stuff go.
What do you think?
He let a lot of stuff go where other referees... No, he's an Ulster referee. Yeah, he's a monoman.
If that was a Dublin ref,
that was one of the guys from further down the country that they would have been calling a lot more stuff. But McNally,
I think we got a decent amount of the 50-50.
We got lucky, and then there was a Jolly Oak Burns one. Will he give that free? You remember, and then brought it in. And then that was absolutely vital at that point. He dived, he could hit, and then he dived on the ball. So he had given us a couple of lucky ones just previous to that, you know. So it's, I suppose, it swings and roundabouts. But the fact that he'd given them basically a score. Could have been a defender.
But and you can hear it from some of Jim's commentary in that obviously there's a huge buy-in from the players to Jim McGuinness, but he trusts his players, and he referenced that a few times. He absolutely trusts them. He's obviously seen what they've put in and what they're capable of, and it's a two-way relationship that I don't think is often talked about, that Jim has full faith in these players, Brendan.
Well, see, if you look at his days playing, you know, all that he learned through all his life, we don't go all in the way at college and all the different experiences he had. You know, you look at then the sports science side of it. So he has that. He has that performance-related thing. That's why he was taking over to Celtic originally, and that's what he really homed in on. So he has all these other talents. Plus, personally, he's a great lad. I mean, I always said he was my captain at Donegal. Brilliant guy in the dressing room. So every box he ticks, and you're going up against other managers there, and you're looking at them thinking, Jim just has so many things that he has that he brings to it. So then you can imagine that Donegal team, his word, they're hopping off his word. And you're looking at last year, players didn't play and things went away. Now this year, any player, but it wouldn't matter where you were in the world, you're coming back to play for Donegal. Your life's going to be put on hold because you know you're going to have days like this. And then when you see that sea of green and gold there yesterday after the match, it was absolutely a phenomenal day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stay where you are, both of you. Mary Coughlin's the chair of the Donegal GEA County Board. Delighted to be able to speak to you, Mary. What a fantastic result for Jim, the team, the association and the fans. I mean, it's a win-win all round.
Oh, well, it's absolutely fantastic. Good morning, Greg. I was just listening to some of the lads there. Everyone's going to start to pull these games apart. But that being said, it's really a tremendous lift for our supporters, our clubs, our you know, all of the coaches that have taught these young people to bring them to where they are at the moment, to Jim and all the management team. And as you know, we really are absolutely impressed about what has been achieved so far in such a very short period of time. I know there was a number of years of a plan, but to reach the pinnacle of an Ulster final and then to win in the way we win was unreal. And then I think we also should mention our hurlers now going to be in the Nicky Rackard as well in the bank holiday weekend. You know, people have put their shoulder to the wheel. Tremendous support from our supporters and also our sponsors, which we also must mention, because without them, we wouldn't have the wherewithal, you know, to take the teams to where they need to be. But everybody's absolutely delighted, and it was great in Donegal Town last night. See all the younger people and all the older people, everyone mixing, everybody in good form, and everybody really, really, really appreciating an evening to enjoy and to celebrate.
Pressure's on you and the county board now. You have to meet any demands that are coming your way from the team, do you? I mean, the wish list's going to be as long as my arm.
Oh, look, we have a plan there. We've agreed a plan. The resources and the support has always been there and will continue to be there. I enjoyed the captain and Paddy's little quip there. Just a little bit of a hint now, because we're going into a very tough campaign now. We have a number of games. We have Tyrone at home. We're away to Cork, you know. So, you know, when you look back, they've been through so much. They've had such difficult and strong and competitive and athletic games. And now we have to start all over again in 2 weeks' time. You know, it makes you think about what's the capacity of everybody. You know, it is a lot on our young people. But look at when you see them, when you see what they've been able to do, when they've come back from 4 points down, other guys will put down their head, they actually drove it harder. And, you know, it's just shown the capacity of a lot of young players who haven't had a huge opportunity. Some of them may never have had an opportunity to be in Clonus.
And also, too, finally, Mary, you talked of the success of the hurlers, and we're going to talk about that, too, in a moment here on the show, and the success of the men's team yesterday. What we can't measure, really, is the trickle-down impact this has, you know, invigorating a new generation of of players, maybe the fella or the girl who skipped training because they couldn't motivate themselves, now will be back at training for the next session. Do you know what I mean? Like this type of a result, this type of a buzz trickles down. It's hard to measure it, but it certainly will have a huge impact on the association across all areas.
It'll rejuvenate it. There's no two ways about it. Look, being able to participate, to be able to get on your club team or your school team, to be able to then go on and get through development squads and then go on to wear the Donegal jersey. You know, that is it's a huge commitment. It's commitment for young people at a very young age. But I think when they see that there's success available to by participating, I certainly would feel it augurs well for the association. And when you saw all the young people there, even over the last number of weeks, you know, the patience of the boys standing there with photographs and, you know, signing autographs and, you know, like, that's what it's all about. And that really, you know, gets young people to think, well, I'd be there too. And you know, if you talk to some of the lads that are on the teams now, that's what they thought of when their heroes were winning as well. So, you know, it trickled down. And I think it's also important to say that our ladies are playing Armagh next weekend as well in Clonus. So, you know, as an association, I think we have done a huge amount. And it's about developing talent. And I know the boys probably know more about this than I, but, you know, it's trying to keep our younger people to continue in their clubs. You know, when you're 14, 15, 16, you know, it could slightly drop, and then there's that age group of 17 to 20. You know, we want to make sure that there's games for those young people, and that, you know, you're not always going to be brilliant the first time you're in a development squad or a team, but you can learn, and coaching is hugely, hugely important.
Okay.
And that's where we need to put a lot of our energy and our strength into now.
Very finally, Mary, maybe today's not the day to ask this question and just bat it off, but just listening to your comments, no, don't worry, it's not that bad. do you think the structure needs to be reflected on at some point? As I say, today is not the day for it, but I know it sounds like you do have concerns that we're asking you know, a limited number of people to continue going back to the well, the same well over and over.
Well, I think yesterday it also shows that we need to look at finals like that going back to a replay, because I think it's terribly unfair. And I do feel sorry for Armagh. They're a hugely athletic team. They're absolutely fantastic footballers. And to lose again in penalties, it's just, you know, it's soul-destroying for them and for their supporters and for the GA in Armagh. So I think we need to review this. And I know the president has looked at that and looked at the format. It's very hard to get the balance between getting our very good players back into our clubs and at the same time supporting our good players at county level. And that's at all age brackets. And this is the pull effect that's there. And it's something that's going to be very difficult to manage. Fixtures, I would say, are probably the most difficult thing to manage when it comes to the GA. But look, at least we're talking about it as on the basis that we've had success. And, you know, the lads have only got a short period of time now to get back and to be ready for Ballybuffet.
Yeah, not a handy tie against Tyrone. Okay, then. Thanks, Mary. Have a good evening. Thanks very much indeed for that. I appreciate your time. Lads, just in relation to... Well, we'll come back to the structure. There's one journey I've followed through this, and it sort of came full circle yesterday. And this is no way a slight against people who have to ask questions. I have to ask questions and all this. But it was Paddy McBrearty's story, right? And you've had, you've had a very friendly tete-a-tete interview-wise with Paddy, is that he had to come out when things were going absolutely crap.
Yeah.
And defend the team, to defend the players, sort of defend what they thought they were capable of. Even when we all thought, right, this is an S show, there's no way back from this here. And then to see him up there on the steps with that cup above his head, and being able to give a victory speech like that there. I'm not saying it's a vindication for him, and it's not a criticism of anyone who has questions, because we have to, but there was something special about that.
He was a major player in the journey and the story. He was the guy who went to see Jim McGuinness when Donegal was put out of the championship last year. There was him and a group of senior players. led by Patrick at the time. So you have to give him credit for that. And it's probably one of those most proudest moments in a Donegal shirt yesterday when he led Donegal to an Ulster title. He had full belief in the group of players that was there, and he knew that if the right man was at the helm and Jim McGuinness was there, that they would be in with a shout. And he was vindicated on it yesterday, so yeah. He was. But there's no doubt about that. And he's playing the captain's role. He led out the team yesterday. Patrick hasn't started all the games this year. So he hasn't. He's played his role on the side. He came on and then was taken off yesterday as well. And listen, he knows how to be a major team player. He walked the team around in the parade yesterday for the first time. Those 16 players, I think,
and the parade. Stull took the huddle talk.
Stull done all of that, yeah. And then his place in the starting lineup on the pitch was taken by Owen Van Geller. So he very much is the team leader, very much is the team player. And when you go back 12 months to where he played his part in asking Jim, as we said,
your reflection on that, Brendan?
Yeah, listen, I suppose you go back to last year. He was quite bullish when you know, but it's that balance, I suppose, Greg. If you have to ask people questions,
no, there's no 100%. Because I wouldn't even be able to say that if he weren't.
So yeah, vindicate is one thing, but I guess at the time he is a different type character, you know. So to him, he just seen we want the best for Donegal, and obviously at the time that wasn't really happening, and so that conversation needs to be had.
Of course
more than
it does, yeah.
The positivity of now. So in many ways for him, and I said it to him yesterday, you've seen so much in football now, you know, from being a minor, getting his first senior start on the same day with Jim back in 2011, all the Ulster finals he's seen, and now to go up and captain them, and particularly after last year. And I suppose for him personally, reaching out to Jim, he's probably thinking, right, I have only so much time left, you know, I don't want to finish it like the way it was last year. I want to get back to the top and compete. So listen, I thought he gave a great speech yesterday. He had a great point when he came on as well. And Oisin's right, his role has to change, and that's the course of time, and the game is so highly energized.
He knows that too.
Jim's thinking, send him in now and a wee bit like Tyrone, send him in now when the game's at a certain stage, and he still has that experience.
We wouldn't have won that Tyrone game, the semi-final, without him.
Of course, yeah, like
he made a huge impact in the
anymore, because years ago when I said it to him, it must be strange watching in now, but I think now the squad is so, people are coming on and off. It's not like it used to be. You know, if you were taken off years ago, it was like, I was there and there.
I know what you're saying.
You can go back on now. This can happen. So this is it had a different world in terms of the squad. Now is so much more important. I mean, when I played, you think about it, it was the starting 15, really. You think back to the All-Ireland at 92, you know, you might have threw on an odd sub or whatever. Now, your subs, a lot of them will win you the game.
Yeah.
And that's what Armagh thought. And Armagh's subs contributed handsomely too, but at the end of the day, it was ours. It was the difference.
Right, on to the complicated, well, it's semi-complicated now, the next stage of the All-Ireland series. It's a round robin. Top of the table goes into the quarters.
That's right. And the second and the third play off in the preliminaries for a place in the quarter.
There's still a lot of games to get.
There's a lot of football to come. Still, but we talked about which group would you rather be in, Greg? And you would rather be in it as Ulster champions, because you have Clare beating Munster champions, or the beating Munster finalists, excuse me, Tyrone, and you also have Cork in there as well, which seems to be an easier group than having Galway Derry.
But if you top that group, you don't face your Dublins and your Kerrys.
If you top that group, that's correct. That's expecting Dublin and Kerry to finish.
I know, but my point is that it's quite important.
You're going to have to meet one of them down the line eventually.
Of course, but hopefully the way things are going.
But as Donegal celebrated last night, there's no doubt about it, and they're probably celebrating today. And you have to do that because they deserve it. You don't win titles very often. We played in 11 finals in 14 years. And it was 2019 was our last title until yesterday. And before that, we had 18, wasn't it? And then we lost a couple then before that. And then you have to go then back to 14, which was Jim McGuinness's last Ulster Championship game in charge. He's a phenomenal record in this.
Unbelievable.
Percentage-wise, he's probably the most successful Ulster winning manager. Yes, Mickey Hart has won a lot of games, but over a larger period of time. He's lost one match in five seasons. And that was 2013.
And Brendan, this
but sorry, I know I went off track there. We were on about the All-Ireland series, but we are in a group probably we would see as being more favourable to us, but that's not taking anything away from Tyrone. They're going to be hurting from the last day at Celtic Park. We will have home advantage. There's a long trek to Cork, the bank holiday weekend, and we should have push their chairperson on it, because the hurlers are out that same weekend in the All-Ireland Nicky Rackard final, and Donegal are in Cork. So it would be nice if those games were on separate days, where supporters could back definitely. back both sides that weekend.
Hurlers another good one at the weekend.
And the hurlers had a big one. So and then our neutral game's going to be against Clare. You could look at those games and you could think you could be confident, yeah, that you'd be going straight, that you could make it straight to the quarterfinals and avoid the prelims. But how much of a toll? This is the other side of it. How much of a toll has an Ulster Championship taken on these players?
Well, how much
You look at Kerry, breeze through Munster. You look at Dublin. Now, listen, Louth put it up to them yesterday, but Dublin were just strolling along.
Double extra times as well. Yeah. Three Division One teams.
I know you were actually in the stadium, but maybe you got to see do you read anything from Dublin's performance?
No, not really. No, you can't.
Brennan, so just from a player's perspective, right? Now, this is not going to be like a club team where there's a week of celebrating here in certain cases. They'll be back at it very quickly. It's a tough game against Tyrone with more miles on the clock. But as Ulster Championship, maybe, is the weight of expectation off? Do you go in and play with more freedom? Do you say, right, we want more of this, let's go all the way? Like, and this is a game where Jim comes into the whole scenario as well. But how does
you had a three-week break the last time.
Yeah.
So you did. And you had a three-week break. You had longer time to prepare for what was then All-Ireland quarterfinals, wasn't it, Brendan?
Yeah.
And then there was the semi-final, and then the final.
We owe them. Yeah. And they came into their home patch, and I'll tell you, that's the message Jim's going to be sending out.
So that's the motivation.
It was nip and tuck. They came in, 9 points they beat us by? And I know we were after a bit of a run. That was that game in between. Yeah. And Donegal maybe...
We haven't beaten them in an All-Ireland series in Balbuffet, if I'm right.
They came and beat us, maybe it was a 2018.
On Declan Boners, I think it was twice we were beat by them in All-Ireland series by them. So they...
Right,
but they will be coming, and they'll be hurting from the last day, and they'll be thinking to themselves that they were really, really close to winning that game at Celtic Park. Maybe if their forward line was a wee bit more lively. Darragh McCurry wasn't in the game at all. Yeah. Darragh Canavan didn't have his best game that day, so they weren't firing all solid. But look, these are all ups and buts, and they're going to come.
I don't think
we
played really well against Tyrone. I think certainly
it was the way Tyrone was playing the football as well. But Tyrone were locking it down and they were slowing it down, and that was something similar at times yesterday. But I don't think the way they killed the Patrick Tyrone just absolutely zeroed the pace of the game.
If you're in the Tyrone camp, though, you don't want to come to Donegal now.
Yeah.
I tell you that. You do not want to come, particularly to Balbuffet, and I think that's a huge psychological advantage for us.
Brilliant, exciting. There's a story, isn't there, behind every bloody game. It's excellent. Do you have a show tonight?
Have we a show coming up?
You'll be late for that, too.
No, he turns up for that one, the bugger.
Listen, 100%.
It's all meant with love.
We have to give the hurlers back in the Nicky Rackard final, away to Roscommon. You know, these boys just keep doing it and doing it, turning up the heat, Ty. So fair play to Mickey McCann and his side. We're going to talk with John Gilday, Park Hill, for the in studio. We have Cathal O'Kane of the Irish News, and we have Barry O'Hagan, former Armagh star. They're all going to be on the show tonight. Of course, we have interviews right across the board. Myself and Oisin were down in the mosh pit after the game yesterday.
It was chaotic yesterday.
It's chaos down there.
They actually had a barrier round to keep the team in for the celebrations, and I don't think they had enough security on. Because the supporters all of a sudden had filled up with supporters.
It's so
they appeared out of nowhere.
And part of you then being a player, you know, being a back in there, like I always think, do you want to talk? Do you want to? Most of them are, of course, the lads are sound. You know a lot of them as well. Then some of them are doing different things and all that. And we just, within reason, do you want to? It's only a few minutes. But I got Patrick actually on the way in, so we got about 7 or 8 interviews, didn't we?
We spoke to a lot of people. There was a wee bit of editing on some of them because they were overexcited.
I
had to text.
I think the unedited version should be made available as well.
There may be a few bleeps, but
no harm on that.
It was funny because Clonus is a disaster, as everybody knows. People probably send videos trying to send out messages, forget it.
No,
I was trying to email back. Oshie was like, just WhatsApp it to me because WhatsApp, we can get it.
Whatever it is, the signal's very poor. And Clonus is trying to get stuff out.
And as you leave, then it just howls everywhere. And I'm sending away at this message. I'm like, come on.
Brilliant stuff. All right, your life from 7 just
7
after the
o'clock
news.
Yeah.
Alright, brilliant stuff, and there's a wealth of stuff up on our website as well too, by the way. You won't miss a thing, lads. Brilliant coverage, but isn't it great to be part of
you were standing beside him, Martin McHugh, at the end of the match yesterday. He was getting very emotional, Martin McHughes is seriously proud Donegal man. And I remember him at the end of the Down game when we went out of the championship last year. He gave this passionate speech, and the then chairman, Fergus McGee, spoke about it on numerous occasions, and Donegal had to change their tact and plan, and they had to get Jim McGuinness, and it was all coming off the back of this. And we've seen that, how proud of Donegal man he was again yesterday. And he says that one yesterday was right up there with some of his most memorable days for Donegal, because the county was back together again. Everybody, players, supporters, county board, everything was all as one again. And it's days like that that you have to celebrate, because they don't come around too often, and they mean so much when it happens as well. You could see that with Martin yesterday. So you could. We had the arms around him as we were looking down, chatting away at the end of the game. We're starting to get caught up ourselves here. We were like,
We had Martin McHugh dancing and everything.
We didn't have a camera on him at the time, but he was.
There was some brilliant exchanges. I saw one too between.
Well, Mark McHugh nearly wrecked the press. Mark McHugh was working a wee bit over from us.
Yeah.
And he nearly tumbled the whole press area. When the penalty was saved, obviously he came over to greet his dad beside us.
I delighted for my end. What a great house in our Ulster Midland.
And I think Jim McGuinness, there was a couple of crucial points where he went over and had a specific word with Ryan McHugh. Obviously, seeing the importance of his influence and leadership. And
stature. Ryan's been fantastic this year. You have to give him credit for it. He was particularly the Derry game. He was outstanding in the Derry game, and he was really good in the Tyrone game. And listen, he was solid yesterday, but he was a marked man.
While he's getting that attention, presumably
the rest of them all have to step up.
It frees up some space.
We start naming names. You may as well name.
All right, okay.
The whole squad. It's ridiculous. Like that's what I'm saying. Everybody's doing their jobs and playing well, and it's fantastic. Yeah.
All right, listen, brilliant stuff. Thank you so very much to both of you for calling in. You just had to come downstairs.
At least I was in time.
And come here, don't go changing, Brendan. It's kind of cute that you're always late.
Yeah. Is it all right? Not in Aussie's world.
back after this break.
Right.
All right, every time there's an election, the conversation comes up about election posters, whether they should be used, whether they shouldn't be used, their location, whether they block lines of sight, and once they're actually up, whether or not they are maintained or destroyed. Seemingly, there seems to be more posters being removed or destroyed right across this region. Right, Councillor Michael McBride's running in the upcoming election, of course, as an independent. Michael, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, you have used election posters in the past, not since I think you became an independent. Why do you not use them?
That's correct, Greg. I had used posters in the past. I suppose once I became an independent for the election in 2009 for the election in 2014 and the election in 2019. I decided not to use posters, and an ironic thing, the couple of elections that I used posters and I didn't get elected, and when I stopped using posters, I've got elected twice.
Well done. What is your reason for not using them, though?
I have a few reasons. I think number one, the local Tidy Towns is here in Letterkenny. They've asked me not to using them. So they say it, there's always a lot of cable ties left on polls after the elections. I think myself, sometimes the posters are put up in places too, that are dangerous, they're blocking views, and sometimes they get storms there, during election campaigns, and it blows them down. And I also just think the cost of them as well, if you're running as an independent, they're probably a 3x2 posters running at about €12 a piece, So I think that it's a serious waste of money, in my opinion. And I suppose the last part of it is, from what I understand, that takes about 400 years for a cardboard poster to biodegrade. And I'd rather just go out and meet people on the doorsteps and talk to them. Take longer, 6 or 7 weeks at canvassing and try and get to talk to people on the doorstep. So that's kind of my point of view.
Would you like to see it still up to each individual candidate or party, or at this point would you like to see them banned? Now, I mean, you're coming from a perspective where you don't use them, but I think you're still able to consider both options.
No, because I suppose that's up to everybody individually. I think whilst it's open to put up posters, the majority of candidates for elections will put them up because marketing will tell you that they do give facial recognition and that you do get more votes. My opinion is what I would like to see is that LAMA and AILG, which is the bodies that represent local councillors, might put a trumpkin of a proposal to government to ban them outright. And that would mean then that's a level playing field.
But does that not favour the candidates, though, with the machine behind them, you know, the party behind them, the people working on the ground, the ones with the big teams?
Well, I don't know about that. You know, you could look at it the other way and say maybe it's the parties that have more money than independent candidates and put them up as in their advantage. I suppose you can argue the toss both ways there. But, I mean, from my own point of view, as you know, I'd rather see in Ireland that we didn't have posters up. But at the end of the day, until there's a law made that everybody can't put them up, they're simply going to be there.
Independent Councillor Nicholas Crossan is with us again, not standing in the next local election, but still time to put your papers in, Nicholas. You're not wobbling, are you?
Good morning, Greg. No wobble from Nicholas. Mind made up. We'll miss it, all right, as I was saying, but no, I'm not doing what. Just great. Just also on a, or just congratulations to Jim, the backroom staff, and on the Donegal team yesterday. Fabulous day.
You know, it's an election time because there's this week, for some reason, people were able to tie in the Northern Lights to their election campaigns, and Donegal winning Ulster into the election campaigns. Fair play to them. Never miss an opportunity. You used election posters yourself. What is your view about their importance? And I presume maybe you can lean on, because of your involvement with LAMA, you can sort of lean on a bit of an experience, you know, sort of sampling the experience from across the country. What are the pros for them for a candidate?
The pros for them, as you touched on it there, Greg, the independent candidate might not be as well known as the party person or a new person coming on the scene. Who wants to run for democracy or for politics. I think it's a way of showing democracy working, that we can put up our posters, get our photograph out there and tell the people of our area that we're running for politics. And I think it's good. You see, there are regulations regarding posters. They can't go up 30 days prior and have to come down 7 days later. And if those regulations was carried out, and as Michael touched on as well, if they're put up in a safe place, not cutting down on vision lines or anything in safety, that I don't see anything wrong with putting our posters up. Maybe at the present moment in time, I heard something earlier on saying that we had a glut of stuff in Buncrana. We have Coghill winning the football matches, their flags up. Actually, somebody who was in the Irish Army said, was talking to me, that our tricolour is flying disrespectfully. I've asked for flags to be taken down after a certain time. And look, as I said, Donegal County Council owns all the ESB poles in Donegal, which I was unaware of up to about 3 or 4 months back. And there's no policy on that we can hang whatever we want from an ES, or as I would call them, an ESB pole, and there's nothing happening. But at least with election posters, there is regulation.
All right, stay where you are. Dr. Anne McCluskey is a candidate in the local election area, part of the Irish people, but framed as an independent or as an independent. Dr. McCluskey, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Good, 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 good. What's your experience been of postering in and around Letterkenny?
Well, as you say, this local council election isn't my first rodeo. I've been involved as elected to the local council in Derry and Strabane, and I was deputy leader of Aintu and northern chairperson of Aintu for a while, but I had to resign because of fundamental disagreements over the way that lockdowns were managed and stuff. Personally speaking, I am not a fan of election posters at all. They're vastly wasteful. They're not particularly pleasant to look at. I think, you know, it's really person-to-person interaction at the doors is much more valuable. I'm not sure that anybody changes their voting because they see a picture on a lamppost. And I do think they're, you know, I think they've you know, that way of communicating is belongs to a century ago.
But is it not useful for someone like you? I'm sorry, Anne. You're not based in Letterkenny, are you?
I live in Derry, but I spend more time in Donegal than I do there.
I'm
a couple of miles from the border.
No, so. I get you, and that's not really the point of the question. It was really where I was going with this is for someone like you then to sort of get your name and face out there, for those who may not be aware of you, postering then is a necessary evil. You put up 25 posters. Do I read correctly that they're all gone?
Yeah, but the first thing I would say is the residents of Letterkenny would be very glad to hear that my face was not on the posters. We took an administrative decision just to keep them generic. So the posters are about the message of what the Irish people stand for. They're I think, quite nicely done. They have our logo on it, and people hopefully will associate the logo then with the logo in the ballot paper. So they're not personalised, certainly the ones that I have. People do not need to look at my face leering down from every lamppost. So myself and my brother went down on Tuesday night and put them up. They were high. They were in the appropriate places. They were not on, you know, over traffic signs or anything like that. But we put them up pretty high. And I then got a phone call on Thursday night to say that someone had seen people vandalising them and taking them down. And I went down then on Friday to do a bit of canvassing. And every one of them was gone. Mm. Now, when I say everyone, there were only about 25 posters in all. As I say, our posters are about the message. It's what we stand for in this administrative coalition of independence, which is the Irish people. They were all gone. Now, I didn't check. There were two up at the churches there, up at the cathedral and the Church of Ireland chapel. So there were two up there. I haven't checked those, but I suspect they've almost certainly gone.
Do you believe that this was specific to you? I've heard of some posters going missing.
Every other poster is still there.
Yeah, go. That was my question.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, this is an interference with the democratic process. Mm-hmm. People are either Democrats or they're not. I mean, is this fascism where now you're not allowed, if you have an opinion that somebody doesn't agree with, they can commit criminal damage at the time of an election.
Okay.
Hugely serious. And to be fair now to the guards in Letterkenny, I went to them on Friday night. They were more than helpful. And they share that analysis that this is a crime which will be investigated.
Okay. Dr. Anne McCluskey.
All of those roundabouts have CCTV. So whoever did it, if they want to contact me quietly and return the posters, I don't have an issue.
And that'll
be the end of it. But otherwise, the guards are going to go ahead and there will be a criminal prosecution.
All right, we'll speak again, I am sure. Sorry to rush things along, but I want to also bring in Rebecca McDade, who's standing in the local elections in the Lifford-Stranorley area for Ain't Do. Rebecca, you are using posters, are you?
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning to everybody there. Yes, I am using posters because this is my first time to stand as a candidate. I'm in the Lifford and Stranorley area. So I just think that for a first-time runner, it's important that people get to see the face. They know who they're voting for. They can put a face to the name. For that reason, I think absolutely there's no reason why we can't do that.
Yeah, you say that your intention is to use them. I mean, obviously, listen, there's going to be an impact in the environment, but you maintain that this is... You're going to reuse them so in other words, they have a longer lifespan, which in a way I suppose is better for the environment rather than reproducing them every time one stands.
Yeah. Our posters, the Aintoo posters, are reusable. And that has been, there's been a lot of money put into that this year in order to make sure that we have them for when we go to run again. I do plan to do it in the long term, so... I would like to think that I will be able to use them again the next time round.
Okay.
It's important, I suppose, that people... Michael touched on it there. Good morning, Michael. You touched on it there about the cost of them. And, yeah, if you're going to put money on the likes of this for advertising for you for the election, I think it's important that the money is spent wisely. Just to say that we as a party aim to, because... We don't get government funding, so we are doing it ourselves. So we're very much aware of that, the situation there. I think there was another thing that Michael may have mentioned there too, or maybe it was Nicholas mentioned it. Good morning, Nicholas. I think it would be a good idea for, you know, public spaces to be made or public billboards. That's another thing down the line that could be thought about.
Yeah, I've often said in the past, I don't know why there aren't one or two digital signs on the approach to town, and the candidates are rotated on them, and everyone could have equal access. Yeah. Rebecca, good luck with everything. I'll chat to you again in the future, and of course, good luck to Dr. McCloskey as well. Thank you for that. I think we can all agree, finally, Nicholas Crossan, regardless of, I mean, obviously, unless something is offensive or what have you, but regardless of people's, you know, views on things, I think it's important that posters remain up.
100%. Like, that is, I didn't know about Dr. Anne's posters being taken down in Letterkenny. That's absolutely disgraceful. We had one burned and one Crana, which is terrible altogether. Like, we are living in a democracy, thank God. But for somebody to go around and deface posters, tear them down or burn them 2 or 3 weeks out from election, I think maybe it's just because people might be making an impact. And other people are afraid of it, but I don't think anybody should interfere with posters.
I get
we do live in a democracy, and let's keep that alive.
All right, take care. Nicholas Crossan, independent councillor, not standing again, in the local elections. Michael, finally from you. I mean, obviously, listen, you're going to be very well received on the doorstep. I'm sure every candidate's going to feel like that. I'm just wondering, are you being challenged more this time round than in previous elections? Do you find that, you know, people are maybe go, look, no harm, Michael, you're a nice fella, but stuff politics. Like, what is the sort of sense or feeling you're getting on the doorstep? I mean, you go to every door. You don't pick just certain spots, do you?
Greg, we don't select doors. We try to go to every door. And I suppose every door is different, and we do have doors where people have serious issues, and I suppose a couple of, you know, the issues that are probably coming up strongest on this election is obviously the Mica situation. Yeah. Is probably number one, and number two would be probably an open borders policy. Okay. And stuff like that.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we don't have time to dig into that, but it was interesting to get that insight. Thank you very much indeed. I've got more breaks than I have time, more to do than I have time, so please don't go into thinking I'm cutting Michael off for any reason. I'm not. We're going to talk about all those issues over 12 days of debates, believe it or not. We're back with you tomorrow morning from 9. Stay tuned. Aidan's up around the northwest after the break and news.